Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello from Washington. Welcome back to the program, or podcast, that helps you improve your American English skills. We tell you about important events from around the world, and we speak slowly and with simple words, so it is easier for you to understand and learn. We will begin today with news about the economy in India. Then, the issue of the U.S.-Iran nuclear deal. What are lawmakers on Capitol Hill now saying about the possible agreement? Two important subjects are just moments away on The Voice of America. Here is part one. In India, government efforts to reform the economy have slowed. The reason? The political opposition is blocking the passage of legislation through Parliament. Mario Ritter has our report.
For more than 2 weeks, India's political opposition has blocked action in Parliament. Opposition members are demanding that Prime Minister Narendra Modi dismiss his foreign minister and two state leaders. The targeted officials are accused of corruption. Mr. Modi's government has refused to dismiss the ministers, saying the accusations have not been proven. The dispute in Parliament has almost ended the government's hopes of passing legislation related to tax reform and land purchases in the current term. Dharmakirti Joshi is chief economist at the ratings agency CRISIL in Mumbai. He says these two bills were the centerpiece of the government's promise to make India an easier place to do business. What is happening in respect to both the bills is that there is delay and dilution of content. If they don't get cleared, yes, it will be a hit to the sentiment and it will constrain growth going ahead, he said. The tax reform bill is known as the Goods and Services Tax. It aims to create a single market across India. It would do this by replacing the many different taxes levied by individual states with a single sales tax. The land bill would have made it easier for industry to acquire land to put up factories. However, those plans have also been delayed after the opposition denounced them as anti-farmer. Prime Minister Modi is having a difficult time passing laws because his government does not command a majority in the upper house of Parliament. Satish Misra studies Indian politics for the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi. He blames the government for not doing enough to build ties with the opposition.
They will have to take the opposition on board. Then only the things will start moving. Now the government is not willing to concede even an inch to the opposition.
The political impasse is affecting the Indian economy. In a recent report, Moody's said the disputes are hurting business confidence. How business leaders feel about current economic conditions. The credit ratings agency added that the government's failure to deliver promised reforms could slow growth. Prime Minister Modi came to power last year on the promise of restoring momentum to a slowing economy. Growth has picked up, but the rate of change has been slower than expected from a man who many had hoped would change India's business climate. I'm Mario Ritter.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. United States lawmakers have begun considering the international agreement to restrict Iran's nuclear activities. Some members of Congress are still uncommitted on the nuclear deal. They say they have yet to be persuaded on whether to vote for or against it. Last Sunday, a member of the U.S. Senate said she does not believe she or other uncommitted lawmakers are under any pressure from either side in the debate. Senator Claire McCaskill is from Missouri and belongs to the Democratic Party, the same party as President Barack Obama. Also last Sunday, Mr. Obama warned that congressional rejection of the deal would make it harder to keep Iran from getting nuclear weapons. Ann Ball has more.
Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill has yet to announce her position on the agreement. She says she is reaching out to diplomats of countries holding Iranian money and other assets. She wants to know if they will continue to respect international sanctions on Iran if the U.S. Congress votes against the deal.
That money is held primarily in India, China, South Korea, Japan. So I'm on the phone to those countries, those embassies, those ambassadors, asking them the question, what will you do if the United States walks away? Will Iran get this money anyway?
If these countries enforce the international restrictions on Iran, should the Congress vote down the agreement? Would that make her more likely to vote against it?
It's not a perfect deal, obviously. We don't trust Iran. But I think too many people are judging this deal against the status quo, not what the new situation would be on the world stage. Remember, the world is united in this deal. So it's going to have to be a status quo where the rest of the world also stays united, or our sanctions regime will just fall apart.
Last week, New York Senator Charles Schumer announced his opposition to the nuclear agreement. Mr. Schumer is a leading Democrat. Senator McCaskill says she does not feel pressured to make a decision by either side.
I don't think any of us feel pressured either by Chuck Schumer's rejection of this deal or the president's full-throated support. I hope that all of my colleagues are doing what I'm doing, and that is doing our homework. One of the things that was most disappointing is the Republicans insisted on 60 days to review this deal.
Ms. McCaskill criticized the Republican Party for making a hurried decision on the deal.
It appeared to me most of them made their mind up in about 5 minutes. And so I think this is one where the heightened rhetoric on both sides is not always helpful. And I hope that more senators keep their blinders on, do their homework, and figure out which way do we secure Israel and secure our country.
President Obama was questioned late Friday for a show that CNN broadcast on Sunday. The president said that studies show a majority of Americans are against the nuclear deal because they do not have all the facts. He called it a complicated agreement with a country where demonstrators chant "Death to America." But he said those who know most about the difficulty of keeping Iran from getting nuclear weapons support it. Mr. Obama said congressional opponents of the agreement have a lot in common with those in Iran who want to limit contacts between the two countries. He said those who have announced their opposition before reading the agreement are not interested in the substance of the issue, but the politics of it. And he warned congressional rejection would make it harder to keep Iran from getting nuclear weapons. Mr. Obama said the international unity resulting from the agreement would come apart. He said that would not be just on sanctions, but also on opinions about U.S. leadership and who is responsible for the dispute between the U.S. and Iran. Next month, U.S. lawmakers are expected to vote on whether to approve or disapprove the international nuclear agreement with Iran. If they reject the deal, Mr. Obama has threatened to veto such a vote. I'm Ann Ball.
This is VOA, the Voice of America, from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Studies have shown that children from poor families have more difficulty in school than other boys and girls. Children with higher socioeconomic roots seem better prepared and perform better on school tests. Now, American researchers may have found a biological reason for that difference. They found differences in the brains of students who had low standardized test scores. Their brains had less gray matter, and their temporal lobes developed more slowly than the other children. The findings were reported in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. Temporal lobes and gray matter are very important brain areas, says researcher Barbara Wolf. She is a professor of economics, population health, and public affairs at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. The brain areas are critical in the sense that they keep developing until individuals are well into their adolescence or early 20s, and critical in the sense that they are important for executive function, she said. Researchers studied brain images of nearly 400 children and young adults. The youngest subjects were 4 years old. The oldest were 22. Researchers looked for a connection between the person's socioeconomic status and his or her test results. On average, young people from poor families had test scores between 3 and 4 points below what is expected for their age group. The poorest students scored between 8 and 10 points below the developmental norm. Ms. Wolf says there are several reasons why poor students often have lower scores. One reason could be poor children do not get the food they need for healthy development. Poor parents are less likely to stimulate their children's brains through talk, play, and activities. Ms. Wolf also blames the stress that parents face in trying to deal with poverty, putting food on the table. The researchers say that up to 20% of the achievement gap, or difference in test performance, could be tied to poverty. Ms. Wolf suggests early action may improve the brain development of children living in poverty. Reaching out to children when they are very young could help raise their test scores and academic performance when they are older. She says that when the source of the deficit is known, these areas of the brain can be developed. It means that policies can be developed that overcome this deficit. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States became a nation in 1776. Less than a century later, In the 1860s, it was nearly torn apart. A civil war took place, the only one in the nation's history. States from the North and the South fought against each other. The conflict involved the right of the South to leave the Union and deal with issues, especially the issue of slavery, in its own way. This week in our series, we examine how the Constitution survived this very troubled time in American history. The Civil War was fought from 1861 to 1865. 600,000 men were killed or wounded. In the end, the slaves were freed, and the Union was saved. Abraham Lincoln was president during the Civil War. He said the Southern states did not have the right to leave the Union. Lincoln firmly believed that the Union was permanent under the Constitution. In fact, he noted that one of the reasons for establishing the Constitution was to form a more perfect Union. His main goal was to save what the Constitution had created. One cannot truly understand the United States without understanding its Constitution. The document describes America's system of government and guarantees the rights of its citizens. The power of the Constitution is greater than any president, court, or legislature. In the coming weeks, we will tell the story of the United States Constitution, including the drama of its birth in Philadelphia in 1787. Before we do, however, we want to look at how the document provides for change without changing the basic system of government. If you ask Americans about their Constitution, probably the first thing they will talk about is the Bill of Rights. These are the first 10 changes to the Constitution. These 10 amendments have the most direct effect on people's lives. The Bill of Rights guarantees freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press. In fact, all of those and more, including the right to peaceful assembly, are contained just in the First Amendment. The second one states a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Fourth Amendment protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Other amendments say that people in criminal cases cannot be forced to make statements against themselves and have a right to a speedy and public trial by a jury. The Bill of Rights also deals with the separation of powers between the federal government and the states. In the words of the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, powers belong to the states unless the Constitution gives them to the federal government or prevents the states from having them. The Bill of Rights was not part of the document signed at the convention in Philadelphia in 1787. The delegates believed that political freedoms were basic human rights. Some of the delegates thought it was unnecessary to express these rights in a constitution.
Most Americans, however, wanted their rights guaranteed in writing. This is why most states approved the new Constitution only on the condition that a Bill of Rights would be added. This was done, and the amendments became law in 1791. One early amendment involved the method of choosing a president and vice president. In America's first presidential elections, whoever received the most votes became president. The candidate who received the second highest number of votes became vice president. The Constitution was changed after separate political parties developed. Then ballots began to list the names of separate candidates for president and vice president. There were no other amendments for 60 years. The next one was born in the blood of the Civil War. During the war, President Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. That document freed the slaves in the states that were rebelling against the Union. Later, the 13th Amendment banned slavery everywhere in the country, but Lincoln never lived to see it. He was shot a week after the South surrendered. The 14th Amendment, approved in 1868, said no state could limit the rights of any citizen. And the 15th, approved 2 years later, said a person's right to vote could not be denied because of his race, color, or former condition of slavery. By the 1890s, the federal government needed more money than it was receiving from taxes on imports. It wanted to establish a tax on earnings. It took 20 years to win approval for the 16th Amendment. The amendment permits the government to collect income taxes. Another amendment proposed in the early 1900s was designed to change the method of electing United States senators. For more than 100 years, senators were elected by the legislatures of their states. The 17th Amendment, approved in 1913, gave the people the right to elect senators directly. In 1919, the states approved an amendment to ban the production, transportation, and sale of alcohol. Alcohol was prohibited. It could not be produced or sold legally anywhere in the United States. The amendment, however, did not stop the flow of alcohol. Criminal organizations found many ways to produce and sell it illegally. Finally, after 13 years, Americans decided that prohibition had failed. It caused more problems than it solved. So in 1933, the states approved another constitutional amendment to end the ban on alcohol. Other amendments in the 20th century include one that gives women the right to vote. It became part of the Constitution in 1920. Another amendment limits a president to 2 4-year terms in office. And the 26th Amendment gives the right to vote to all persons who are at least 18 years old. The 27th Amendment has one of the strangest stories of any amendment to the United States Constitution. This amendment establishes a rule for increasing the pay of senators and representatives. It says there must be an election between the time Congress votes to increase its pay and the time the pay raise goes into effect. The amendment was first proposed in 1789. Like all amendments, it needed to be approved by 3/4 of the states. This did not happen until 1992. So one of the first amendments to be proposed was the last amendment to become law. The 27 amendments added to the Constitution have not changed the basic system of government in the United States. The government still has three separate and equal parts: the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. The three parts balance each other. No part is greater than another. The first American states had no strong central government when they fought their War of Independence from Britain in 1776. They cooperated under an agreement called the Articles of Confederation. The agreement provided for a Congress, but the Congress had few powers. Each state governed itself. When the war ended, the states owed millions of dollars to their soldiers. They also owed money to European nations that had supported the Americans against Britain. The new United States had no national money to pay the debts. There was an American dollar, but not everyone used it, and it did not have the same value everywhere. The situation led to economic ruin for many people. They could not pay the money they owed. They lost their property. They were put in prison. Militant groups took action to help them. They interfered with tax collectors. They terrorized judges and burned court buildings. The situation was especially bad in the northeast part of the country. In Massachusetts, a group led by a former soldier tried to seize guns and ammunition from the state military force. Shays' Rebellion, as it was called, was stopped. But from the north to the south, Americans were increasingly worried and frightened. Would the violence continue? Would the situation get worse? Many Americans distrusted the idea of a strong central government. After all, they had just fought a war to end British rule. Yet Americans of different ages, education, and social groups felt that something had to be done. If not, the new nation would fail before it had a chance to succeed. These were the opinions and feelings that led, in time, to the writing of the United States Constitution. And that will be our story in the coming weeks on The Making of a Nation. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History, in VOA Special English.